Welcome back to another episode of Crossing Broadcast. I am your host, Kyle Pagan. Hit that thumbs up for me if you're watching on YouTube underneath the video right there. If you're listening on YouTube or on podcast or you're watching on YouTube, hit the subscribe for me as well. We've got a great episode for today. We have Kevin Owens coming up at 12:15. He wrote the book Overseas Famous, where he talks about his professional basketball career overseas and all the wild stories from his almost 10-year career over there. Then we have Mick from the Samboners, a popular Instagram account in the area that reviews sandwiches. We'll get you ready for game day on Sunday if you're already planning on what to order. But first, let's bring on Kevin Kincaid. What up?
What's up, Pagans? How are you?
How are you? We got 15 minutes to kill, so this is what I wanted to talk to you about. Mm-hmm. Are we experiencing a shift in the way people think of hiring in the NFL, specifically head coaches? And I'll go over a little bit because you did write about this a couple days ago. So the Eagles are obviously playing Jeff Saturday this weekend. You, a couple days ago, wrote about the discourse around him being irrational on the site. You can go on crossingbroad.com. One thing that stood out to me was you wrote, guys who played any game at the highest level know the game at the highest level and don't need lessons. Sure, there are myriad complementary skills to learn, but when it comes to commanding the respect of a locker room, Jeff Saturday only had to show the Colts his Wikipedia page. And I thought that was pretty interesting because I think you can actually look at currently what the Eagles are kind of experiencing with Nick Sirianni and stuff. You know, the guy stumbles at a press conference and people are like, this guy's a bumbling idiot. He can't be a leader of men. He can't walk in the locker room and people, you know, and then he takes him 9-8. He takes him to the playoffs and everything. So I was wondering if there's like going to be like this shift away from like your offensive geniuses. Like there's always going to be offensive geniuses. Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, your defensive geniuses, Mike Vrabel, Brandon Staley. Do you think we could see a shift if Saturday, you know, becomes successful to kind of like the more Mike Tomlin-esque era where he won a Super Bowl with Bruce Arians, who's going to be a Hall of Famer, offensive coordinator, and Dick LeBeau, who's, I think, in the Hall of Fame, or he's going to one day be in the Hall of Fame defensive coordinator. What do you think about this kind of this shift and this whole Jeff Saturday thing?
It's just funny to me because, like, I think the theme of the column was that the discourse surrounding anything Jeff Saturday is just completely ridiculous on both sides of it, you know, because after he went out and beat the Raiders, who, by the way, stink, you know, in his debut, you know, all the like all these like media people came back and were ripping like Bill Cowher and, you know, Joe Thomas, I guess. Right. Were like the guys who were ripping him, you know, so I thought the reaction was funny, too. But nobody should like should overanalyze the Jeff Saturday thing, like beyond the point of Jim Irsay is just a whack job and made like an impulse, like whimsical kind of hire here, right? You know, I mean, it's not like if they did like a whole big thorough search and you adhered to the Rooney rule and did everything you were supposed to, then you came up with Jeff Saturday, I think people would have more of a reason to, you know, bitch and complain and, and rightfully so. But it's not, that wasn't the process here. It was like a owner just kind of flapping at the wind here, you know. But it's funny to me too, because Jeff Saturday, I think in that introductory press conference said like, bro, I was in a locker room for 14 years. You know, I went to the playoffs 12 times. I mean, he was a 6-time Pro Bowler and he won a Super Bowl. So there's never going to be any question like a dude like that coming in and being able to command the respect of a locker room. All you had to do was show him his Super Bowl ring, you know, and like say, hey, I played with Peyton Manning and all these dudes. So that was never the issue. You know, I just think it's funny because, you know, people look at like paying your dues and going like straight to the top of the line, you know, and how do you like interface those two things, like a long playing career with a long coaching career? You know, if Jason Kelsey retired at the end of this year and immediately walked into a coaching job, would you say that like the guy who's been working his way up the coaching ranks for the last 12 years deserves it more than Kelsey? Yeah, that's right. It's such a weird thing to me because, like, you know, it's funny in soccer, you have to get like your coaching licenses. You know, and they offer, you go take programs or whatever. I have like the first license. I have like an E license, right? So you go, I went up to like friggin' Bucks County for two days in a row. We did like a course and I got like my E license. But can you imagine somebody like Messi retiring and then it's like, well, you have to get your coaching license. No. I mean, it's like one of the greatest to ever do it. You know, so like, that's kind of where Jeff Saturday is coming from. He's like, but man, I did this, you know, I have not like coached at this level, but I've played at this level. Like to me, it's still,
And we're not like giving Jeff Saturday his flowers. Like you said, he beat a 2-7 Raiders team. All they did was just run the ball down their throats. Yeah. But then you also look at this Raiders team and you look at Rich Bisaccia last year, who came in the interim after John Gruden gets fired, goes to the playoffs, basically returns the same exact team and adds an all-pro wide receiver, doesn't get the job. They give it to Josh McDaniels, six-time Super Bowl champion, and now there you got the second pick in the NFL draft coming up. Like,
yeah,
it's just kind of a – is it a crapshoot or is it just – well, obviously, Josh McDaniels also got caught for cheating when he started 6-0 on the Denver Broncos and then he got fired.
Yeah.
But, like, there's not really like – like when people get all upset, and I know there's like more underlining issues on why people are upset about Jeff Saturday, that's a whole nother conversation. But when people get upset about like these guys who make hire, like these guys who get hired, like can we just wait for the next eight games to play out before we're like Jeff Saturday can't do this or Nick Sirianni stumbling out of press conference can't do this?
There's so many examples of this in every walk of life though. And like I would if they ever asked me to come back to like a college classroom or a high school classroom or something like that and give advice to people, I would say like your resume only gets you like 2 to 3 years into your career, you know, and then it becomes about like who you know and just whether your shit's good or not, you know, because you could go either way with this. You could go Steve Nash, you could go Martin St. Louis, like, okay, some players work and some don't. Like, so you either like innately have the ability to coach or you don't, you know what I'm saying? Like you can teach it and you can take all the classes in the world and get all the licenses in the world and spend all the, you know, time and experience doing it. But like some people just kind of have it and some people don't, you know? And it's funny, it makes me think of the Inquirer in a way, because it's like when they got rid of like, you know, all the old white dudes, you know, and then they started bringing in people who had like 2 years of experience or 3 years of experience or whatever. Like you can make the same gripe about that. It's like, have these people paid their dues, right? But at the end of the day, like if they're good writers and they know what they're doing, then they're qualified for that job. You know, it's like when you slap like arbitrary mandates on something, it's stupid to me. That's why whenever I would look at a job and it'd be like, you have to have at least like 7 years of experience doing this, or you have to have 10 years of experience doing this. I mean, we got a guy on the Sixers beat who like is still in college and writes better shit than some of the 20-year veterans, you know? So to me, it's just kind of silly when you look at all of it that way. Either your stuff's good or it's not. And I mean, we'll see what Jeff Saturday does against the Eagles. But it was funny because I was on this show like 2 weeks ago saying that the only thing in front of 10-0, the only thing keeping the Eagles from 10-0 is Sam Ellinger and Jeff Saturday. And that was a wrong take. They didn't get to 9-0.
And so. Taylor Heineke and Ron Rivera when everything was going to shit.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
What do you think about the whole Jason Kelce thing? Don't blame it on the refs. I know you had a little thought about that, which I actually did agree with you about that. Like, I never understood the whole, like, you can't blame the refs because, you know, we did this X, Y, and Z. I disagree with it because I think you can, you know, it's the old Kevin Kincaid, two things can be true.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you know, the fumble after the 50-yard reception, some penalties, all this other stuff, three and outs, but you got a face mask and you got to roughen the passer at the end of the game. And then like tell that to like New Orleans versus the Rams in the playoffs a couple years ago, and they didn't call that a flag on the pass interference. Yeah. And tell me that.
Don't blame it on the refs. Yeah, don't blame that on the refs. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, man, because like I wouldn't expect anything less from Jason Kelce or any other athlete. You know, I mean, they're conditioned to just focus on what they can control. And
he also probably didn't want the fine. So like you got to think about it that way, too. I wonder if they could fine people off a podcast now. Probably can.
Yeah, I think any public comment that you make that's critical of the officiating, they can come back and they can levy a fine for that for sure. So I wouldn't expect him to say it that way. But my thought is that just, it doesn't tell the whole story of the game. It just kind of plays to like the lowest common denominator of fans. Like don't blame the refs. Well, I mean, there's plenty of room to blame everybody. I mean, the Eagles were largely shit and the refs were largely shit. So let's tell the whole story here. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous to me that people would not be upset about that face mask, because not only was it egregious, it's not like the refs missed something that was like a split second kind of thing that they, you know, that maybe you might not spot. I mean, the dude had a full grasp of the face mask, was pulling him down, like an extended motion of doing that.
And now he got her on the IR.
Not to mention he injured the guy and put him on the IR. So I get why Jason Kelce would say that. It's almost like what we were talking about with Seth Joyner. Like, of course the athlete is conditioned to say that it's not good enough and this is what we need to do better, but that's just not like practical. And it's not, you know, it's very surface level explanation when like it's neither. See, here's the thing, Pagan. It's like everybody, especially in Philadelphia, or sports fans especially, feel like you need to boil down something to either or like a single explanation. No, they lost because the offense sucked. No, they lost because the special teams sucked. No, they lost because the defense couldn't get off on third down. Well, I mean, all of those things are factors, you know? So I don't know why we're incapable of just saying that it's all of that at the same time.
No, my favorite thing about the NFL is the narrative that changes from week to week. Like, we've seen it a lot with how, like, the Vikings have been performing and stuff. Like, you can see that, you know, some people don't think the Eagles are the best team in the NFC, completely forgetting that in week two, we absolutely lambasted the Minnesota Vikings on Monday Night Football. Then you have this whole, you know, Jeff Saturday, what an elite coach. He's like, shoved it down the throat of the Raiders, 2-7. But no one, like, really worries about that because, like, everybody was, like, talking shit on Jeff Saturday. Jeff Saturday wins. Now the conversation is back to, wait, can Jeff Saturday actually do this? Because it's such a fine line between, like, GOAT and whatever the opposite.
I mean, the morning show, WIP morning show, is asking if Gannon and Clay should be fired. You know, I mean, like, I know it's not the greatest example, but yeah, I mean, these things shift like the wind, because, you know, it's just flimsy, you know, day by day reaction. You know, I mean, you got to take things in stride with all that, you know. And even, like, going back and looking at a little bit of the film from, I'm not like one of these dudes who sits on Twitter and it's like, here's my rewatch game, you know, thread. Here's my all 22 thread or whatever. But I try to go back and watch, you know, parts of the games. And honestly, like, I don't even think it was like the run defense was not great, but I mean, they were getting killed on some of these third downs, like throwing the ball, you know? So, not even that, but just people kind of latch on to one story and keep telling it. And I don't know. I guess that's my gripe. That's just, you know, nobody ever really looks at the larger picture, you know?
You ready for the story this week?
Yeah.
Jeff Saturday having the Colts practice outdoors when they're playing in a dome on Sunday in the snow. In
yeah, what is he getting degrees. Ready for? The is he getting him ready for the thunder snow in Buffalo?
Yeah, someone was like, well, he's probably preparing them for, you know, games, you know, down the line in the schedule that he's going to play in cold weather games. They play one more and it's against the Giants and, like, the last game of the season. So,
you know what you should do? You should keep on with your retractable roof take, and you should just hammer the shit out of it with Buffalo, because you got a franchise quarterback up there in Josh Allen. You're going to make him play outside. Like, absolutely. They should build that guy a friggin' dome.
My retractable roof take has just continued to collect W's. Now want to say, okay, fine. You know, football should be played in all weathers. Whatever. If you want to be that guy, you can be that guy. I'm not saying, and this is what people get confused, is when they hear retractable roof, they hear roof and they just stop. Their brain just stops right there. Like, the retractable roof does not have to be on there at 80 degrees in Buffalo in week one or week two. Yeah. It's just for games like this. Right now, they have a proposal in for a $1.5 billion stadium. It's the snowiest place in America right now. Mm-hmm. They had the win game last year against the Patriots where they lost.
Brutal.
The elements have a lot of times, like, not always had a positive result if you're a Buffalo Bills fan up there. Now, with that loss last week, if they lose this week and the Chargers and the Patriots win, we're talking about a Super Bowl contending team, one of the favorites, now is the seventh seed in the playoffs because they're playing in 6 feet of snow. If they do play the game and they end up moving it to Detroit, now you're losing a home game and you're playing in Detroit. Just build a fucking retractable roof, and we have none of this. Well, maybe you have, like, you know, the fan safety and everything, but they got snowmobiles up there. They're salting way better than down here.
You largely have to do what's in your best interest, right? I mean, what is 3 feet of snow in the Buffalo Bills' best interest? No, I mean, fans who yearn for, like, you know, historic clips of, like, Shady hurdling a bunch of dudes in the Snow Bowl, right? I mean, like, that's great stuff to look back on, but you have the best quarterback in Buffalo since Kelly was there, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, and you have a chance to win a Super Bowl or two during this run. So would you not do everything you can to maximize that and put them in, like, an environmentally controlled environment? And, you know, you know what I'm saying? Like, what I'm just trying to think of, like, who does this benefit? You know what I mean? Like, what other than, like, the TV stations and the fans who want to see
the mouth breathers who still fucking think that we don't have the tech. They still think we're living in the 1980s where we don't have the technology to build these roofs and get these calls right now that, you know, millions of dollars are on the line and stuff with gambling and with endorsements and with players and everything. Like,
you know who the people are?
What if someone tears their ACL? I'll be that guy. What if someone tears their ACL?
The people who are against your retractable roof take are the same people who thought that the Eagles should not have tanked the end of the 2020 season because it was, like, a disgrace to the game, right? Because it's about the integrity or whatever. Never mind that they turned that into Devontae Smith and another draft pick. You know, at some point you got to like just look at, you know, rationality here. What is most beneficial to the Buffalo Bills? It's not playing in 60 inches of thunder snow or whatever. And as Peter notes here, Super Bowl is not played in snowy conditions, right? It's like they're not, it's not going to happen. You're going to be playing in Miami. You're going to be playing in LA. You're going to be whatever. It's my take. Well,
speaking of a guy who's played all over the place, he's never played in Buffalo. He's played in Roanoke, Virginia. He's played in Kosovo. He's played in Australia. He's played in South Korea. He's played in a bunch of places. I think he even played in Estonia. We've got Kevin Owens, who is the author of Overseas Famous, which basically just takes him on his entire career and telling the craziest and nuttiest stories from his whole time in overseas playing basketball. So, Kev, thanks for joining us, man. How are you?
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. It was I'm doing well. This is a lot of fun. I'm excited to talk to you guys.
Yeah, New Jersey was an exotic location as well.
Very, very, yeah. That was the most exotic location I've ever been. So that was
the beaches of Monmouth.
Yes, exactly. Can't compare to Cairns, Australia, but you know.
Yeah. How do the beaches of Monmouth compare to two Kosovo guys trying to fix a broken down van in the middle of what is a person from Kosovo? Kosovoan?
I had to Google this for the book because I had no idea. And I think it is like Kosovarian or something like that.
Yeah,
they threw an R in there for some reason. I have no idea why. There's
Kosovar,
no R.
Yeah, okay.
Right. Yeah. That's not even in the Albanian language. I don't know why there's an R, but whatever.
So you're known for playing overseas.
Mm-hmm.
But you did go to Monmouth University and you played Duke in the first round of the 2001 tournament, the team that won it all, the Jay Will, the Battier, the Chris Duhon, the Mike Dunleavy. I loved Duke growing up, so I was probably rooting against you, so I just want to apologize.
So is the whole entire nation, so don't feel bad. People were rooting for us.
What do you remember from that game? Like, what sticks out, like, 20-some years later?
So it was crazy because I was a sophomore in college, and at that level, at that time, you're new to college basketball. So I was very exciting. There was so much pomp and circumstance, but we knew who Duke was. We knew they were going through the scouting report and they're talking about Shane Battier and Mike Dunleavy and Jay Williams. And it was a very holy shit moment. You're just that scouting report alone, our coach, I remember him reading it and he had like a very, dramatic tone to it, and he was just kind of like, all right, here's who their starting lineup is, it's this guy, and we're all like, yeah, we know. So that was it was intimidating, but I think it was fun. But I remember just kind of like getting that feeling like, let's try to win this, like, you know, it was closer to game time, but let's try to win this. I mean, we were scared shitless earlier, but when you kind of got in the court and you're like, all right, you know, they're just like me, there's nothing really different. There's not that much of a huge dramatic change. So that was something that helped me in my pro career, because coming from Monmouth, you're a smaller school. Then you play at Duke and you're like, oh shit, like I can hang with these guys. This isn't that bad.
Wow. I knew a guy who played at Vermont and they played Duke one year and he was hurt and didn't play much. Wasn't really scouted on the scouting report and everything, but he said Coach K knew everybody's name on the team. Did he do that with you guys? Did he know you guys?
He knew us, and when in lineup, and when we're shaking hands at the end of the game, it was great job, Kevin. Great job, Rasan. Great job, Jack. Like it's like he knew every single person. It made you feel special. And I played with guys from Duke after that, and he like calls on their birthday. I'm like, man, this guy he really had it in tune to kind of make sure that he knew what was going on with these guys.
It's that Army mentality. And I got to ask this. Yeah. So when Jay Williams got drafted and he fell off his motorcycle, were you secretly happy about it?
I always looked at it as the better player I played against, I can be like, oh, look, I played against that guy. I say it with Kobe when, you know, Kobe was playing, you know, I tell my daughter, my brother played in camp with LeBron, and I'm like, wow, this is incredible. It's such a great, you know, it's such a great thing. But when Jay Williams did it, I remember being like, shit, like that's my claim to fame. Like now who's going to know me? Because like, what am I going to tell my kids? Oh, cool. I played against, you know, this guy from, you know, LIU. Awesome. It was a great time.
You see that guy on ESPN breaking down? Yeah, that's the guy.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I hate that Coach K story because it makes me kind of like him now. You know, and like I could not stand Coach K when I was in college. I couldn't stand JJ Redick. I thought JJ Redick was the biggest pain in the ass on the planet. And then like 15 years later, I'm interviewing him down at Camden, and he's like the best quote on the team by far. It's funny how how life comes at you like that. But Kevin, you talk in the book about how you had that. Was it a tryout with the Sixers or a workout?
Yeah,
or
something? Yeah, workout.
You mind telling that story?
So yeah, it was during the summer, and I get a call from my agent. He's like, the Sixers are interested in you. I'm like, oh shit. Now I went and did a whole entire thing and went to a workout, was in with another guy. They were, I guess, interviewing a coach, and they just needed some guys to, you know, do stuff. So I went in and dominated. I was really at the top of my game then. And they invited me back about a month later for, you know, all the preseason stuff, workouts and stuff. So I went, it was crazy because I pulled in, and you know what PCOM was like. PCOM, it's just, there's like no parking lot. You just parked on the freaking, like right off Route 1. Yeah. And the players, you know, the big time players all had parking lot. I like parked in a meter. I remember thinking like, this is wild that I'm going to work out with the Sixers and I'm like putting quarters into a meter. I'm like, this is wild. So
did you ask the person at the front desk, can you validate this? I mean, I'm a college kid.
I don't even think there was a front. The PCOM was so weird. You just walked in and you were like in the gym. I'm like, this doesn't seem like a really high security. So I just walked in and, you know, went in. They brought me down to through the weight room, which is really weird at PCOM because you're walking through the PCOM weight room. So there's like kids who are there to be orthopedics, like doing curls. And like Elton Brand's walking right past him. I'm like, this doesn't seem like a really, this is so weird. So I went in the locker room, and then you get in the locker room and it's the Sixers. It's the old school Sixers logo with the Iverson era logo. They give me, you know, my practice gear. I'm sitting in a locker. All these guys are walking in. I'm like, wow, this is crazy. Like, this is such a cool experience. And then walked up. Got up there early, getting shots up, doing the whole thing. And then Reggie Evans walked in. And I was like, I'm naive because I didn't know enough about Reggie. And he was a maniac. Like, he practiced harder than anyone I've ever met. And again, life lessons for all these because it helped me later on. But he was intense the entire time. He was a crazy person. He was, you know, grabbing, holding. I came home, I had scratches all over my body. My wife's like, what happened? I was like, trust me, not what you think. So he was all Reggie Evans.
Yeah.
So he was intense, and you know, it was a tough workout. And you know, over the course of that time, like, he just was in my shit the entire time. And I really learned to respect his game because his defensive ability. But you know, he was what stood between me and an NBA, you know, getting into the door for the NBA. And sadly, he shut it directly in my face and probably like spit in it too. it was pretty intense.
Reggie Evans was a dog, man. For people who never got to watch him play, like, I always would I would have loved to model. Well, my game was kind of like Reggie Evans because all I could do was rebound and my range was like 2 feet. But of course, he was insanely more, you know, athletic than I ever was. But is it funny to you, man, to look at PCOM and what it was like for the Sixers really not that long ago? Before they built that beautiful training complex and they turned the corner and came out of the process era. And now you've got Joel Embiid dropping 59 points. I mean, I don't even recognize that old franchise at all.
And you think that Iverson, that's where Iverson practiced. And it was that moment I was like, I get what he was saying. He's talking about practice. Like, I get it. This is practice. Like, I'm not an orthopedic, so I'm not gonna really go all out for practice.
Yeah. It's what do you make of the Sixers right now? They've been intensely popular over the last 5 or 6 years, you know, but can't seem to get over the hump. And no, I'm just kind of curious at the way that you look at it.
So I have a very player's perspective. I get that it takes time. Things take time. And I think the unfair thing for the Sixers, not for anyone's fault, just bad luck, is you really haven't had that much. You've only had, you know, a small sample size of what happens when Harden, Maxey, and Embiid are all playing at the same time. So when those three are all playing, it's uncomfortable because no one's really knows what they're supposed to do. I mean, you look what happens when Harden goes out, suddenly it's like the power structure shifts and now Embiid's going out and dropping, you know, nearly 60 points. and doing all this, and Maxey's contributing, and, you know, everyone else can kind of fill in. But then when those pieces are individually taken out and sprinkled around, it's like they don't really know who's the alpha. Like, it's, I guess Embiid's the alpha, but it's, I will say this, the hardest thing, and we're not in the Shaq era anymore, but even still, like, Shaq had Penny, Shaq had Kobe. It is hard to take over a game and be the guy when you're a center, because you can't have the ball in your hands. You have to have someone give you the ball. So that's what I always thought was the biggest problem in the playoffs, is their alpha male is a big who, it's, you can't really win a championship unless the guy who has the ball in his hand is doing things other than, you know, just getting the ball in the post. And he's a good shooter. He's, but he's not the guy who's going to create off the dribble as much, because he's so, you know, when he's 25, 30 feet away from the basket, it's really tough for him to have the ability to create against a really tough defender.
That's the paradox of it, Kevin, is what's fascinating to me, because you look at the NBA being such a perimeter game these days, mm-hmm. you know, and yet you look at like the MVP race, and it's like Jokic and Embiid 1 and 2. But yeah. at the same time, like, you know, they run this like delay action with Joel, you know, having the ball, and then your two pin down screens and everybody running up on the side. You have sets where he's on the perimeter, but right, you're not going to like ISO Joel, or you're not going to ISO Jokic in the last possession of game seven in,
yep.
in the playoffs. So it's still, that's the funny part of it to me on one layer. And then even within the Sixers team, James Harden is probably the best in the NBA at creating weak spots and identifying mismatches and just getting switches off of quick screens and stuff like that. So I just find that all fascinating. It's like, I don't know how you mesh all of that together, how you make sense of all that, you know?
No, I totally agree. And that's, you know, a lot of people are putting a lot of pressure on Doc, and I get that. I think, not that I'm defending him, I just think it's very tough, because I don't think he even has figured it out, because he hasn't had enough time to be like, okay, what works with this group? What doesn't? Like you said, you know, Harden's very strong at this, and Embiid's very strong in this, and they should really coincide very easily. But I don't think they've had the sample of how exactly Harden plays and how exactly Embiid plays to really give it, the old college try and figure it out. That's why this season I thought was so important. I mean, I'm all about, you know, on paper, it's great. Like, I thought, it's crazy, because I'm comparing to the Phillies in spring training, I was telling people, I'm like, I'm buying my World Series tickets by June. I was like, I'm hoping they make the playoffs, because on paper they were great, and then they ended up showing it, but they ended up being that underdog. So I think the Sixers are similar. They're on paper, they're great. They just, maybe they need a change of coach. Maybe they need, you know, just to figure out how these three can all interact together. And you know, they need to be injury free. Jesus, it's wild how the injury bug has affected this team.
Yeah. So the book is Overseas Famous, The Travels and Tribulations of a Basketball Globetrotter. I read it last year and reviewed it for the site. It was really good, man. I think the thing that I liked most about it was just the crazy just stories contained mm-hmm. therein, you know, and stuff that I think is meaningful, because look, the bottom line is, like, I think it's easy for us in the media and us as fans to say, well, this guy didn't make it to the NBA. You know, this guy's a G League player, this guy's whatever, but the stuff that you guys have to deal with travel and not playing with guaranteed contracts, and you're trying to, I thought what was fascinating was the story, I guess, I think it was in South Korea, how you were talking about playing through the injury mm-hmm. and trying to mask the injury or work the injury so that, you know, you can make your money at the same time. I mean, if you could go back and pick like maybe one crazy story out of the book, which one, like, you know, resonates to you the most about trying to make it big?
No, I definitely think that South Korea situation, because that encompasses everything. You know, it has everything. I went and I made, you know, you're making so much money. It was, you know, high six figures, and you're like, this is incredible. You're really starting to, it's getting there. Like, I'm here. And then you get hurt, and the team is like, you're not hurt. And you're like, okay. Like, you know what your body, the trainer's like, you're not hurt. And I'm like, well, I am. Like, I know I'm hurt. And then they're like, well, if you don't do this, this, and this, you're being released. And you're like, but I can't do this, this. And it becomes, when I ended up, you know, getting released because I couldn't do it, it became a situation where they were like, it was their word versus mine. And I went home and got, you know, what I needed to get done, an MRI. They showed all the damage and they're just like, it's you, everything would be tried in court in another country. And you're not going to win that case. Like, look at the Brittany Griner situation. Like, it's you're dealing with a lot of corruption over there. So it's really your word against theirs. And that was the toughest part of being an overseas basketball player, is year-to-year contracts, and your contract can be gone just like that. And no one's going to defend you. And your agent could try, but they don't really have the power. So it's a very difficult situation. And I think it makes you tougher. My life after, I feel like I've been able to grind and push, and I haven't stopped because of all the stuff that I've learned from playing basketball overseas, that you just can't, you can't let things, you never get comfortable. And I think that's helped me in my post-career life, of just never being comfortable, because, you know, that's what I learned playing overseas basketball.
You played in Kosovo, which I don't know how many people know this, like, was not even an independent country until 2008. Were they like under Russia, Albania? Who were they under?
They were under, it was, I guess, like Serbian rule.
Okay. And it was like, there was like a war going on.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I went there shortly post-war after, but you saw, I mean, the place was,
I've seen War Dogs. If it's anything like Albania.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I was like, try not to curse, but I was like, shithole is really the best word I can use to figure it out. So it is
all Soviet era, like block buildings and stuff. Like,
it's very like plain. It's very gray. And you would go through the countryside, and the countryside is like, there's holes, there's craters from when bombs went off. There's like dirt roads everywhere. What I would compare, like 95 in Philly, that would be a paved road. But then when you get off to like go on 76, it's a dirt road. And you're like, this is what, like, where am I? So
there are some craters on each in 95.
Yes. Yeah, it's very true. I guess we can compare it to Philly.
would Kosovo be the craziest place you think you played?
Yeah. Because the fans were very, whole Balkan Peninsula. The flares. I know KD, Kevin Durant, went to Greece. And, you know, he's showing the videos of the flares, and people in America were like, holy shit, like, this is incredible. And for me, I was like, yeah, that was every game. Like, they're lighting flares.
Yeah.
They're lighting flares. They're throwing coins on the floor. You know, sometimes they're throwing flares on the floor. It just was a very raucous atmosphere. And I, growing up in Philly, I kind of was better off because I could understand it a little more. I could understand their passion. But, you know, it was wild when you were on the other side of that on the court, and, you know, people were throwing coins, they were breaking the glass, and there's glass in the arena. They were breaking the glass and throwing shards of glass at us. And I'm like, man, like, could you imagine the stories if like this happened at a Phillies game? People would just go and take it over. It would just be like, no, you can't be a city anymore.
We threw snowballs at Santa 60 years ago, and all they could talk about still is us throwing snowballs at Santa. I did want to ask you, so like, obviously you grew up a Philadelphia sports fan, so you know, understand WIP 97.5 after games, so sports radio's nuts.
Yes.
You played before social media and stuff. So like, after bad losses, like, are you in like a cab? Are you like in a bus and there's like some Albanian or some Kosovoian sports radio talk and they're just like shitting on Kevin Owens?
When I was in Kosovo, I didn't have a car. So I was walking back to my apartment. So people could just be shouting stuff at me and I'd be like, cool. And like smile and wave. But yeah, I definitely think that in Australia, that was where you kind of saw it here and there, because that you would hear it on the radio. And sometimes it was good. I really didn't. And it's weird because I always never understood when athletes were like, I don't listen to that shit. And then I was kind of like, I was the guy. I was like, yeah, I really didn't listen to any sports radio in Australia. I was like putting on whatever station had music and just listening to that. Cause not that I didn't even want to, I just didn't even really care to hear. I was like, whatever, just, you know, what is this? Yeah. So.
Kevin, if there was one, you know, if people read your book and you were looking for something like to resonate with them or something to stick with them, like if they had one main takeaway from reading all of those stories and learning about your experience, what would you want them to come away with the most?
I think, honestly, the biggest thing, the biggest reason I wrote the book, A, to tell these crazy stories, but the second reason would be to kind of showcase what that there's so much basketball out there, that there's basketball all over the world. And, you know, we follow the NBA intently. I watch every Sixers game. I watch, you know, TNT. I'm watching basketball all the time, college. But there's so much more out there, and no one really understands it. And to kind of give faces to the guys who, when I always say, like, you, Tyler Hansbrough plays in the NBA, huge star in college. He's playing in China. He's playing all over Europe. He was playing in Puerto Rico this past summer. And people will be like, you'll hear Tyler Hansbrough and be like, oh, I wonder what that guy's doing. And that's what those guys are doing. They all head over there. And so to give kind of light as to what happens over there, and also to just kind of show people that, you know, if you work hard and, you know, if you are able to persevere through things, you know, maybe things will be better. And that's what my whole career has been. It's just been one big grind where I just kept persevering. And, you know, it's, you still can do it and you can still make it.
Because your boy's with Stauskas, right? And he had that whole thing where, like, didn't he drop like 100 and some points in like 3-4 games last year, and then he got called up. Then he almost won a title.
It was two games. He was like in Grand Rapids and boom, like, he just had a monster game. And he's sitting on the bench watching, you know, right there with the Celtics about to get a ring. I was like, it's just an incredible experience.
Yeah. I think that falls by the wayside too, man, because the NBA is such a star driven league. Mm-hmm. Nobody's like, really, there's great players in the G League, you know?
Oh yeah.
Like just on the cusp, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, nobody ever really talks about that because they're focused on KD and Kyrie and Jason Tatum or whatever. And I always feel like that did a disservice to basketball in general. I understand that is the way it is, but there's a lot of talent out there, and I'm glad that they're kind of mining it properly now, or at least the mechanisms for bringing those players up are like exist now, and when in the past they did not, you know?
Yeah.
100%. I mean, you said the mining is like really good because they're starting to treat it like minor league baseball where you can kind of pull guys. And people will say this all the time, but like the guy at the end of the NBA bench is like
really
remarkably
damn good.
Yeah. He will destroy anyone else in the world. Like
he'll destroy anybody else other than the like eight guys currently in the rotation.
Exactly.
Right now.
Remember when Brian Scalabrine had that whole bit up in Boston? He would play like fans who thought they could beat Brian Scalabrine. He would just beat him like 12-0. But yes, you can't blame him.
It was like 40 at the time. Just like you don't understand how talented these guys are.
Yeah. I thought I was okay in college, and then I played a 3v3 against Mark Bulger's sisters. We're both like really damn good. You remember Mark Bulger, the St. Louis Rams?
Yep.
He
won me a fantasy football championship.
Played basketball at West Virginia, and just like it makes you respect the differences in level. You know, I think like I wish fans and media would kind of get away from that a little bit, like shitting on the last guy on the bench.
Yeah,
that guy could probably dunk on every single other person.
100%. 100%.
Man,
and you're talking about Oh,
go ahead.
No, I was saying, like, you're talking about like eight guys. Like, you're talking about maybe the starting five, and then everyone else after that. You can really interchange a lot of those guys. You know, I always look at what the U.S. men's national team did, and they bring it like Jordan Morris, and they're bringing in some of these guys, and people are like, why? And you're like, well, you don't see what's going on off the field. These guys might be great leaders. They might spill a certain thing that really is perfect and needs attention in a big game, and they do it. So I'm very happy. And that was just my U.S. men's national team plug because I'm psyched for, you know, Monday. So
There you go.
Do you have an opinion on Ben Simmons? Because you played in Australia. Obviously, you have buddies that Australia basketball like runs tight. They're a tight knit group. Do you have any opinion on like Ben and like, you know, you see it right now in the Nets, it came out yesterday that like they're already kind of like over him.
I was kind of a team Ben Simmons guy, and it was a lot had to do with the Australia thing. I was like, you know, he represents a place that I love. And then it was weird because as that last series that he played in Philly went on, I was like, man, this guy really doesn't have that heart. And I've seen him do it before, but never in those pressure situations. Like he's taken over games before. I was like, he can do it, but you know, what is his mind like? And you saw it in that last series, and I was like, man, like I don't think he's got it. And then when he didn't play for Australia, that's when the people I talked to in Australia were like, what is this guy's deal? And I was like, I don't know, he's starting to go down a bad path. And then you see it now and you're like, wow, he he really is. I mean, I think he's very talented. I think he's a mental midget. I think he's just completely throwing away of his career, and he's doing it in favor of his ego. And like, he's like, he's the kind of guy you can sit there and be like, that's a blue car. And they're like, no, it's pink. And you're like, what the fuck? Like, what are you talking about? Like, no, it's blue. Yeah. He just won't, he won't change. And it seems like he won't change for anyone. And that's the, his biggest problem. And that one day he'll look back on that and be like, shit, I should have done this. But he really, he right now he doesn't have, he hasn't figured it out. And it's really, really frustrating to see a player of that caliber just waste it.
Well, hey, man, thank you so much for coming on. Go check out Overseas Famous. Is the best place to go Amazon? Is that the best?
Yeah, Amazon, you know, Barnes & Noble. You can go into the, whatever you prefer.
Right.
But
we want to make sure you get the highest commission, all right? So you want to make sure we put the right site on.
I love it.
But, Kev, thanks so much for coming on, man. Good luck with everything. And go buy Overseas Famous and listen to all the crazy stories that happened in Kosovo, South Korea, Australia, and all that.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Kev.
Thanks, brother. See you.
Cool.
All right. Well, great that Kev, you know, we went over a little bit with Kev because now we have Mick. We have Mick from the Samboners here.
Bring him on.
If you haven't seen the Samboners, then you don't have an Instagram account in the city of Philadelphia. This is Mick McKenzie. He's co-founder of the Samboners, an account on Instagram. One of my favorite follows on the internet. I know all the go-to places to go if I ever leave Philadelphia. He does come into Philadelphia too. Mick, how are you?
What's going on, guys?
What's up, dude, the first question, like, what the hell is a Samboner? that should be the first question for everything.
Dude, I think that's the question of the day. It's the question of every day. And, you know, curiosity kills, right? No, man, Samboners is a lot of things. It's a loaded question, boys. And, you know, to be honest with you, we're still trying to figure it out.
Okay. So is it just like kind of like a guy that just loves to rate sandwiches or talk sandwiches or
sandwiches? You know, it's the idea around just, you know, heading into South Philadelphia, posting up on a bench. And, you know, for years and years, the core group of Samboners, we were sending pictures to each other and just like, hey, I'm at Angelo's Pizzeria. Hey, I'm at Woodrow's in South Philly. Cool. That looks good. Like, I don't know. Like, video wasn't really a thing. And then as we started this, make this video presence as we are, you know, now we had the idea to, you know, let's start doing some video experience behind these sandwiches, behind these institutes, if you will. So, you know, we're not food critics, right? I mean, we have a passion for food. We may be foodies, but at the end of the day, we want to talk about, you know, sports and chicks and whatever else, right? So It's an opportunity for people to just open up who they are, show us what your personality is all about, highlight a local spot, give a little look of, you know, whatever you're eating. Yeah, obviously you're going to give it a score, right? That's what we do. We get, you know, we rate sandwiches, but you know, at the end of the day, it's just a cool little way to express who you are and have fun.
So Sunday rolls around, the birds are on, it's a 1 o'clock game, no time for brunch, probably a little hungover. Got to go get a little quick sandwich for the game. You want to sit down and be ready. What are some of your favorites to go, maybe around the area, maybe around where you live, maybe in other areas? Like what, like when you get this certain sandwich, you know, it's a 1 o'clock win.
Oh man. Yeah. You know, I'm blessed actually to have some good spots locally. I'm here in Upper Dublin, like the Ambler area. Okay. All right. So my go-to is Sam's Italian Market, just a nice little Italian delicatessen. That's just absolutely slinging, you know, good sandwiches. Really good tomato pie. All their food is freshly made. You know, this joint right up in Ambler just opened up, High Steaks. They're slinging some really good cheesesteaks. My buddy Harry owns a bar in Ambler. He does takeout. He's serving some hog wings, regular buffalo wings. He's serving some pretty good sandwiches too. You know, unfortunately, I don't live in South Philadelphia. That's where all the goodness takes place, as we know. But, you know, if you are flying or, you know, riding into the Eagles game and you're going to tailgate and you don't have the time to, you know, cook, if you will, you pick up a nice sandwich from, you name it. They're all over. They're all over the joint.
Yeah. What if you are heading down to a game and you got time and you prepped?
Where are you going, man? I try to spread the wealth, right? Okay. You know, there's a ton of good places and there's a lot of new places that are popping up. You just saw Tony Luke's. He rebranded the Tony and Nick's. Obviously Angelo's is the go-to. Then there's places right there in the heart of South Philly, like, Little Nick's. Who else is out there? My Paul's. Did I get that right? I think I fucked that up in the past. I called it Me Paul's or something like that.
I've never been there. I said my balls. I'm really not good. I don't explore enough in the city when it comes to sandwiches and whatnot, because I feel like, I don't know, I'm like a cheesesteak snob. So I go to that same place that you go to all the time, or you go to that sandwich joint. Like, I got Liberty Kitchen. I live in Fishtown.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever been there. Dude. That's very good.
Dude, like,
very authentic Italian hoagie. Yes. Your gabagool, your mortadell, like your seasonings and whatnot. It's awesome.
I hear you, right? And everybody, you know, seems to gravitate towards Angelo's, which is great. The dude's the king, but there is these little joints like around that, like, you know, 2 mile vicinity. Dolores's. Have you heard of Dolores's on Second Street?
It's on 2 Street, right?
Yeah. Dude, unbelievable, man, what they're doing in there. You know, Woodrow's is always good. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, I don't know if you listened to the episode where, you know, Colin and your boy Ed Foley got on there and they were asking about, you know, pretty much the same question, like, where's your go-to? And the answer is like, well, where are you coming from? Right? Because there's so many different spots all through West Philly, North Philly, Northeast Philly, Center City. So yeah, I like to spread the wealth, man.
Do you stick your nose up at Pat's and Gino's?
What do you mean?
Do you stick your nose up at it? It's a tourist trap, you know, blah, blah. You can't be there. If you go there, you're a fraud.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that. Like, I took my kid there not too long ago, and he was like, "Dad, this sucks." I'm like, whoa. You know, slow down here. You got to have a little respect for Patch and Gino's. Yeah. Like, without Patch and Gino's, there is no Angelo's, and there is no Woodrow's. And so I have respect for it. I've actually had some good cheesesteaks at Pat's. Mm-hmm. I've never been a big Gino's fan, but no, I have a lot of appreciation for both of them.
Well, good news is this show – there is no cheesesteak discourse here. If you want a cheesesteak, you go wherever the hell you want. You want to go to your pizza shop on the corner. You want to go to your bar down the street. You want to go to Pat's and Gino's, you go to Pat's and Gino's. All right. They all do one thing. They fill you up and they clog your arteries. And that's the good thing about living in America, right?
Wow, I got plenty of 2 a.m. Pat's and Gino's in me, man. Don't you?
Well, I don't know what anybody's – the thing with the cheesesteak thing is, I'm like, what is anybody trying to prove here? It's because it's all the same discourse every single time. Oh, that cheesesteak place sucks. My favorite place is the best. You know, I mean, well, I mean, so what? You
it's
know?
Like music. Music's subjective. Taste buds subjective. Are subjective. They're all DNA. It's different. We all different DNA.
Does that tie into the whole like Negadelphia? Like, people want to create some sort of competitive nature around cheesesteaks, believe it or not. And there's instigators out there because like everybody has their own subjective opinion.
Here's my thing. I think this is a good forum to try this take because you're in Upper Dublin and Pagans grew up where I currently live, like Lansdale, like North Wales area.
Yep.
When we moved out of the city 2 years ago, well, I mean, one of the things that you always heard was like, oh, the food sucks in the suburbs. You know, suburban food is terrible and like you're going to miss Philly and all that. And like I do to a point. But I honestly don't think it's the suburban food is shitty. It's just that the Philly food is that good. You know what I mean? Like it's just I think Philly is actually, believe it or not, like underrated.
It isn't. I mean, if you look hard enough, I should say, like I grew up in Bucks County and we used to go to this place in Hatboro called Silvio's Deli, like places, these little hole in the wall gems that are baking their own bread, boys. Like those are the spots that you want to hit. Like Sam's, I already mentioned, they bake their own bread. Silvio's bakes their own bread. Who else? There's a place in Trevo's, Da Vinci's. They bake their own bread, right? If you find a place, cause you know, a lot of these guys, these legends out there, like Tony Luke and Danny, they'll be the first to tell you if you're getting a sandwich served on a fresh roll within like an hour or two of it being baked, that fucking sandwich is going to be good.
Yeah.
Excuse my French. I try not to say the F word too much.
No, I went to college in West Virginia. I moved to Georgia for a couple of years. I lived in Augusta. And in Augusta, I could not find a good sandwich anywhere. I couldn't
Not a pimento cheese guy?
Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm not the pimento. I mean,
I hate pimento cheese.
No, no. Funny thing about that is that, yeah, because the Masters was there, like pimento cheese was the big thing or whatever, right? You go to the course and it's all old school, right? So you buy a pimento cheese sandwich. It's like $1.25. Mm-hmm. They don't upsell anything there, so it was old school. But yeah, it was like impossible just to find like a they didn't have anything like that. They didn't even have like your gas station sandwiches. Like there's no Wawa or no like Sheetz down there. You know what I mean? It's like they had like Waffle House, they had like Circle K, but you couldn't find in Georgia. I could not find like a good sandwich.
Well, that's the thing, man. I mean, that's the struggle across the board. And, you know, just like Philly sports fans are probably the best traveling sports fans in the country, you're starting to see a lot of Philly transplants open up cheesesteak joints all over the country. Yeah. And where they flaw is the bread.
Let me ask you this question, because one of the movements that they've made in recent years, like you look at all of the upgrades that they made to the Wells Fargo Center, even like Lincoln Financial Field or whatever, they have like a million food options now, right? And it used to be like you just go, oh, I get a hot dog or I get like a cheesesteak or so. There used to be like three things on the menu. And now you can go, now you have like famous chefs opening places in like the Wells Fargo Center and whatnot. I mean, does that... Well, I would ask both of you guys what you make of that, because I always think of it as like I'm going to the stadium, I'm going to get like a sandwich and a drink. I never thought of like going to a sporting event, like getting like fine dining or like croquettes or something. You know what I mean?
Go ahead, Mick.
Yeah, no, I think it's I think a lot of it has to do with marketing, to be honest with you. And in my humble opinion, if I go get a steak at Wells Fargo, I don't think Delco's there anymore, but I don't expect that cheesesteak to be as good as the cheesesteak I'm going to eat at Delco's in Fulcroft or Broomall for that matter. But from a marketing standpoint, like, hey, why not? Right. And, you know, I think that's my take on it.
I think it's kind of like the airport. You know, you're not going to the airport to get good food. You're going in, you're getting out. You know, I know there's a Jim's there, there's a Tony Luke's there, there's a Chickies and Pete's there. I've never had a dinner at an airport or a lunch at an airport, be like, you know what? That knocked my socks off. I'm coming back to Terminal F. I'm going through security and I'm coming back for, I'm going to take the missus out.
Yeah, I've actually gotten to a point where as sad as it may sound, I don't even eat at the arenas anymore or the ballparks. I like to just go stop somewhere like a Pasta Fisio's right around the corner. Phillies let you bring it in. I don't know if the Eagles do or not, but there's more of an experience actually going to the spot. But, you know, nothing to take away from those establishments getting their, you know, foot in the door at some of these bigger arenas.
If I had to rank them, I would go Phillies number one, Wachovia Center number two, Lincoln Financial number three in terms of
the Wachovia Center. Is that what you just
said? All right. Hey, listen, who's the oldest guy?
That's a good list. That's a good top five list. I never even thought of that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's a question.
The food at the bank has come a long way, though, I will say.
Yeah. Got to bring the Schminter back.
I mean, is there even time to eat at an Eagles game? Like, that's the last thing that I want to do.
No. And like it's interesting because we go down, they invite the media down, and like you go do the tour, and it's like, hey, here's all the new offerings. And I'm like, this is cool. Yeah. You know, I mean, this, why not? But then I'm sitting there thinking to myself, like, what Flyers, what part of the Flyers fan demographic is eating like the poke bowl? You know what I mean? Or like the vegetarian, whatever. Yeah, it's not like an
cheesesteak egg roll. It's like, I don't go to a Flyers game. Like, get me a cheesesteak egg roll.
If you ever find me watching a Flyers game with chopsticks in my hands, seriously, you can ban me from a Philadelphia.
But that's what I'm asking. It's like, I don't, it's to me, there's just like, it's got to interface properly with the demographic. I don't know. Maybe there's a bunch of Flyers fans who like, you know, Asian food or something. Right?
Yeah, you think the mongrels in the 300 level are eating Pokeballs as they're just bashing a Korean fan face in between bites?
yeah. I don't know. It's just like funny to me, but they've come. Yeah. I mean, you watch different sports different ways too. I mean, if you're at a Phillies game, it's slower. You're sitting there, you got time because there's more breaks or whatever, but yeah, I don't know. It just doesn't something
the
about
lines make suck me too, man. The lines at the Phillies game in Ashburn Alley are absolutely out of this world. If you want like dried out, what is it? Chickies and Pete's, fries, go right ahead, but you're waiting in line for a whole inning. It's insane.
It is, man. It is. It's mind-boggling. I like walking through, though. I'm a huge fan of people watching, but I'm the same way. Like, there's no way I'm going to spend two innings waiting for a cheesesteak that is not going to be as good as the one you could get at the actual establishment, you know, like Campos, right? I'd much rather go to Campos in Old City than Campos at the ballpark.
Oh, the Mac and Manco pizza, man, was okay, but you're going under the boardwalk, man. Go down to the boardwalk and get your Mac and Mancos. But, I did want to ask you this because, you know, we're coming out of a pandemic. You know, the big thing was like small business, you know, help them out and everything. Is it hard to straddle the line between like, I want to review this sandwich, but if it's a bad sandwich, I want to give it an authentic review, but I don't want to absolutely trash this small business.
It is, man. It is. Now. Dude, absolutely.
I saw your rant about Delco Steaks and I 100% agree with it. If it's all about consistency.
Yeah, no, and I had a rant about D'Alessandro's too. There is a fine line. And for the longest time, like a lot of our closest buddies were like, dude, you guys are killing it. The content's awesome. But like, where are the bad reviews? Right. Like,
yeah, you don't get a lot.
We started this journey by, you know, putting ourselves on the quest for the best, right? Like, I'm not going to go drive 50 fucking minutes, spend $20 on a cheesesteak that sucks just to produce a shitty 3-minute content video. Like, I'm on the quest for the best. But, you know, I will say though, like, not to be a dick, but like, you know, I've gone on some rants about places like DeLisandro's. Like, when I was growing up playing, I played golf at Archbishop Wood, and we would play Roman Catholic right there at Walnut Lane.
Oh, what a beauty.
Absolutely, dude. Right after Walnut Lane, we're going to DeLisandro's, we're going to Chubby's, we're killing them all. And like, I just remember those days, like crushing a nice cheesesteak from DeLisandro's and it being the absolute best cheesesteak I've ever had in my life. And then, like, I think I did a review. I might have been hungover that day, and I did a little review, and I gave it like an 8.6 because it saved my life. You know, fast forward an hour, I'm driving home. I'm like, you know what? That cheesesteak actually wasn't that good. And like, yeah. I let them have it, man. Like, I don't know what's gotten into me, but like, they need to know, right? An establishment like DeLisandro's should be always in the high eights or low nines, but you know, unfortunately, they are slowly putting themselves into that tourist trap conversation. And I don't want to get into that conversation.
Nope. That's, you don't have to. I'll say Chubby's is better across the street. The place across the street, Chubby's, is it called?
Yeah.
It's better.
They it's are. Better. They are. And we just,
and it's quicker. Just faster.
Yeah. We put Barry's in our top 10. Barry's a little sleeper in Manayunk. You know, yeah. You got to be consistent and you got to be passionate about it. DeLisandro's, unfortunately, I think, has gone through a couple different owners over the last 5 or 6 years. And
I mean, you're fair because you look at your consistency and you think of like your Angelo's and you think of your Sarcone's bakery and you think of your Collegeville Italian bakery, I think it's called. People love that place.
Yeah, they do.
Never been, but people absolutely rave about it. Maybe it's because they're funny signs, but it's also because they do really good stuff. And I go back to Liberty Kitchen because I like theirs. I don't like Middle Child, but people love the Middle Child breakfast sandwich. A little too much egg for my life.
It is.
The egg's like this big.
Like a cloud.
It's insane. It's insane. Like, enough, like what are their food margins on the egg? Like, they have to be putting the back on the egg.
It's wacky.
But there are some bad places that used to be legendary because of the consistency just isn't there anymore, and that happens. What are some sleepers that people should know about?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Like, I think I brought up, well, I don't think Dolores is a sleeper anymore, but it was a year ago. What's a good sleeper? Like, this isn't a sleeper either, but I was blown away when I went there. Phillips Steaks. Have you guys ever had Phillips?
Heard of it, never had it.
It's right there by the stadium, South Philadelphia. It just doesn't get a lot of pub. It doesn't get a lot of press, but if you like Steve's Prince of Steaks, you'll like Phillips.
You ever been to Jim's out in Delco, Phil and Jim's?
I believe I have. Or was that Mike and Emma's? I think I hit Mike and Emma's. But Phil and Jim's is getting a lot of pub for the best hoagie on earth.
I'm going to tell you right now, go out there and do it. You'll love it. Do not get the large. It's going to scare you. You're going to see small and you're going to see large. And you're like, you know what? Small is probably like a 6-inch. Small is a regular hoagie. Okay. A large could feed 3 people. I made that mistake. So I'm just helping out a friend.
Dude, that's like Marinucci's in the Northeast, man. Have you ever been to Marinucci's? You could use their hoagies as a sword, man. Mow you down.
Can I just say that this is a terrible conversation to have before lunch? Like, there's no way I'm going down to my fridge after this and making a shitty like sandwich. It's like, I have to go,
dude. Get out there and sandbone it, brother.
Yeah, you better be. Where's your spot in Lansdale?
There's this Mexican place up the street that just opened that we go to now. It's called
Roast Pork. It's Roast Pork Month on the Samboners account. So if you got a roast pork place around you, I think you should go out for lunch.
We got some spots, man. Dude, growing up in Gilbertsville, Boyertown area, we had like nothing. We had this place called the Grill Shop in Boyertown that made, you know, and like that was pretty much. But there were no options.
Is there a Pudge's? There's a Pudge's in Lansdale now.
I was a big Pudge's and Bluebell guy.
Yeah, it's up the street on Sumneytown Pike. Yeah, and even on like Main Street, they got some stuff now. I mean, honest to God, like the brewery food isn't bad either. Like, you go to some of these like micro brews that open up their own like kitchens and whatnot. I mean, those are like independent chefs doing that stuff, you know. Yeah. It's like, it's not, that's why I kind of push back on the idea of like, oh, it's so shitty in the suburbs. I mean, it's the food's like pretty good out here.
Oh, good. Go to the Stove and Tap's probably some of the best food for a bar up your way. Stove and Tap.
Yeah, they make
Butcher
good
and Barkeep is good too.
Yeah. Yeah. Butcher and Barkeep, Sumneytown up in Harleysville as well. Yeah. That's what I'm saying, man. I just think Philly overshadows it. You know, I mean, because Philly's like the greatest. It's funny because when I used to do the Union games, people would always, like, visiting media would be there and they'd be sitting in the press box and be like, you know, where do you recommend I go for, like, food, you know, here? Well, I'm like, first of all, you have to drive into Philly, of course. But yeah, I mean, I didn't know what to tell them because there was like a million different places. I think that's probably the thing that we miss the most about moving out here is just being like walking distance to all these great places. There's good stuff out here, but I mean, I could just go around the corner and there was like an amazing sandwich shop every like three blocks.
It's a sandwich town, man. Philadelphia.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Well, I'm going to go get lunch now. See ya.
Yeah. So I went. Yeah. So I got to ask, what is the best sandwich you've ever had in the Delaware Valley?
The best sandwich I've ever had in the entire Delaware Valley.
Yeah.
All right. This is not hard, honestly. The cheesesteak from Angelo's Pizzeria is the best sandwich in the entire world.
I was afraid you were going to say that.
And I hate to say it because I know that's like the obvious answer, but if we're going to go outside of cheesesteaks, outside of just cheesesteaks, the Schmitter at McNally's.
Where's McNally's?
Chestnut Hill.
Okay. All right, that's not too far from me.
And then there's also like we honored this entire we have an entire month for it's called Specialty John Month. I get a lot of rap for John. Like, go fuck yourself, dude. I say the word John. Like, give me a break. But there's a lot of different style sandwiches out there that are like we symbolize them as specialty. Mm-hmm. The Witter Wadowski. Have you ever had that?
No.
Like the German Polish. Kabasi cheesesteak. They dice it up real good and they put some Cooper Sharp American. The Witter Wadowski at the Mall Galt Company. The Mall and Galt Company. Dude, get yourself there. There's one in Rockledge and there's one in Port Richmond.
Okay.
That sandwich right there may be one of the best in the world.
Okay.
Yeah, the Witter Wadowski, boys.
So we have hot roast pork month this month, right? Hot roast pork or just roast pork in general?
You know, no rules in Samboners.
I like that. And the good thing, and we didn't even get into this, the awesome thing about the Samboners account is you guys have a lot of user-generated content, which I can't tell you, like, you guys are technically influencers because you are influencing people's, you know, decisions on where they go and stuff. Not many influencers do user-generated content. So I think that's kind of a cool niche you guys have where people just submit their videos and you're like, hey, I'm John from Bridesburg. Here's my place down the street.
Yep.
And it goes on your guys' site. I really like that.
Yep. That's the idea, man, to get people to go out there and sambone it. Show us who you are, what you're all about. If you can highlight a place, great. You know, the Philadelphia community is all about just, you know, we try to make that whole brotherly love thing shine, man. Like everybody's in on it. You know, what we went through over the last couple of years has been just one hell of an experience. And for us to be able to just create this little community and treat it as a movement or a lifestyle, if you will, you know, I always preach, man, keep on samboning because it's a ton of fun. And, there's a ton of people out there that need your help.
Yeah. New podcast too. Promote that.
Yeah. So we recently just partnered with Doylestown's finest, Colin Thompson.
Yep.
Or I should say Temple's finest. I know you're a big Temple guy.
Go Temple.
And his media company, Not For Long Media. It's been an exciting couple weeks. And there's going to be some really cool episodes coming up. You'll be in one of them. And we already have recorded three to date. And we got some really cool guests lined up for the next couple. So, yeah, I don't know what's to come, but it's going to be a ton of fun and we're looking forward to it.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, take a look, take a bike, follow. It's the Samboners, I believe, on Instagram, correct?
At the Samboners, yeah, man.
They have a Twitter and you guys have a TikTok?
I'm on TikTok. I don't love it, but I'm on TikTok. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. Taking it over, baby.
I love it. Take a look, take a bite. Mick, thank you so much for coming on, man. Keep on Samboning.
Thanks, brother.
Awesome. Thanks, brother.
Oh, man.
I'm so fucking hungry, man.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'll get you out of here. Let me close this one up. You didn't want to talk for 15 more minutes?
I'm so hungry, man. That Polish sandwich sounds great. A Port Richmond, of course. Yeah.
Dude, I found one yesterday just doing research. There's this place called The Lucky Well up in University City. It's pretty new. The guy's a celebrity chef. He beat Bobby Flay. No big deal. he has burnt ends cheesesteak. So, like, I've already kind of marked that one a little bit.
Yeah.
But all right, I'll get you out of here.
All right.
Go keep on Sambonin. If you want to get a roast pork, film yourself, review it, give it a 1 out of 10. Right. Make sure you get the decimal point in there, right, and then send it over to the Samboner guys. But thanks so much for Kevin Owens coming on. Thanks so much for Mick for coming on. Thanks to Kevin. Thanks to Craig on the ones and twos behind the scenes. We will talk to you on Tuesday when the Eagles kick the shit out of Jeff Saturday and end his coaching career 2 games in.